This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk. It is the holiday season, and racers the world round are still talking of sailing, remembering the races this last season, and planning for the next. In the world of SalesPort, we have news of the time-honored traditional race, America's Cup, and the newest race, SailGP. The defender and challenger of record of the 36th America's Cup, presented by Prada, reached an agreement a month ago for World Sailing to govern the rules on the water and appoint an umpire. And now, the America's Cup teams are keeping their boat designs and training methods a secret from each other as Santa keeps his presents before Christmas. The next edition of America's Cup will begin in Sardinia in 2020 as the challengers compete to see which AC-75 monohull design is the fastest and which team wins that ride to the final match race in 2021. Denmark's SailGP team, presented by Rockwool, will join the world-class lineup for Season 2. SailGP Season 2 will begin in Sydney, February 28th and 29th, 2020. National pride will be on the line as world-class teams take part in dramatic, adrenaline-filled racing on the iconic Sydney Harbor. National teams from China, France, Great Britain, Japan, the United States, and now Denmark will take on Australia and go head-to-head over a series of short-format races. World Sailing, the governing body for the Olympics, has member national governing bodies in 140 countries. During my recent travels in Europe, I connected with 8 of these countries. Malta, a pleasant 19 degrees Celsius with 25 knots of wind predicted, prepares for the Medcoms round Malta, the last race of the season. Erica Reinke on the U.S. sailing team writes friends and family about her dream of earning the U.S. laser radial berth for the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo. And of course, she's going for the gold. SailSport is divided into the organized sport, which has the governing organizations that strive to keep the sport fair and impartial, and into what I'm going to call the unorganized sport, which includes the power and sail cruisers who rally round to each other's club with independence and cheer, meeting up for parties or a quiet sunset from the cockpits of their boats. Some single hand and travel for days without sight of another boat, and some raft together at the dock or on a mooring, swapping stories till late in the night, sharing another round of drinks and good cheer. Here at SailSport Talk, we wish you good cheer this December 17, 2019. Our 38th show is made possible by the talented sound engineers and producers of Sports Byline and media professionals from yacht clubs around the world who bring us great interviews and news of the world of sailing to share with you. This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk wishing you a happy holiday season wherever you are in the world.
Oh, when you hear some Crisscross, you think about Daddy Make You Jump, Jump, Mac Daddy Make You Jump, or Christopher Cross, a little sailing, Crisscross buns, all that. It is Tuesday, two for Tuesday, two people in the studio. As always, our good friend Karen Lyle from SailSport.com. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing good. You know, I think you came over on BART and I came on a boat. Does that say something?
It says that you got more cash. That's what it says. All right. Joining us right now, we're very happy to bring in our guest, Jean Socrate. And she is someone who is a very accomplished sailor, a very accomplished solo sailor. We'll get to that in a second. But Jean, thanks for being on the show. And you did not get into sailing until your 40s. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I got into windsurfing and dinghy sailing. I just loved windsurfing, actually. I really went strong on that. When I was 48, I started that, just minimally, and then slowly got into that over the next few years. And then got onto a big boat when I was 52, so that was my beginning.
Well, I still think 52 is young, but that's pretty good. So when you started with the RYA classes and began your sailing career, did you have any idea that you were going to circumnavigate the globe 4 times?
No, absolutely not. No, I was just enjoying it. I love being on the water. As I said, I just loved windsurfing, and I thought that being on the big boats, you know, a yacht, as we call them yachts in England, we don't have any problem about it. There's not money. It's just a big boat. And it was just fantastic. You know, they had all the sailing, you had the navigation, you had the weather, you had the lights at night to kind of try and figure those out, and the day marks. There was just so much involved with it, and I really took off with it.
Speaking of weather, you're calling from Mexico. What's the weather like there?
It's lovely. Blue sky, temperature is about 25 centigrade, which I think, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, about 80. Very, very nice. I'm having a fan going. I put the air conditioning on every now and then.
I know that when you got started, you were with your husband and you were quite the duo. And then after, you know, he unfortunately passed away about 16 years ago, you decided to carry on and to carry on doing it solo as well. And I just think about the myriad challenges that you face. What were the couple in the beginning?
The top one at the beginning actually was the electrics on board the boat, because we'd had a few things changed in Trinidad. And I hadn't been there. I had to come back to the UK to see to my mum, who was having a problem. So I missed out on that. And normally I was very involved. So boat friends on a boat nearby, they helped me a lot with that. So, getting to know the boat systems was a problem. Sailing was fine. I'd been sailing solo effectively with my husband as he deteriorated for quite a time. And I, you know, had a pretty good sailing experience from the classes I did. But the systems on board the boat, every time everything broke down, I discovered what it was and where it was and how it worked. That got pretty difficult at times.
Well, you have taken the award for the oldest person record for nonstop eastbound unassisted circumnavigation. Now, that's a mouthful, but the essence of it is that it doesn't matter what your gender, what you've done is pretty incredible in this last fourth trip that you've made around the globe. What motivated you to do that?
Well, always it's a challenge. Can I get the boat round? I talked about the systems on the boat a moment ago, and it's actually things on the boat breaking. You have to leave with all your food. So many times people say to me, well, what did you do about food on the way round? I had to have it all on board and plenty of it. Luckily, I did, since I took 4 months longer than I expected. It took 11 months, not seven. So I didn't starve. but everything on the boat broke. And I had to have all the tools. I had to have spares. You know, I was an electrician, a plumber, whatever. Sail repair, sail sewer. Everything on this time round seemed to, a lot of things broke that I never, never expected to break.
We're speaking with Jean Socrate here on Sports Byline, Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle in San Francisco. A couple more questions for Jean. When you think about all the things you had to do from, you know, being a shipwright and bilging out the boat, whatever it was, can you think of a moment, and you might be too modest, but just help us here, a moment when you think, wow, I pulled that off. I was pretty clever on that one.
well, to be honest, I wasn't sure I was going to get across the finish line until it happened. And because, you know, all the way through, I kept being becalmed in between having storms. You know, the weather was definitely, you know, I felt as though I had a demon on my shoulder all the way around. It was absolutely incredible how many things were going wrong. I was pleased when the rod kicker, the vang, when that came apart from the mast at its base, I was pleased when I managed to fix that in place. But I don't think I ever thought I was being particularly clever. You know, just how can we fix this? We've got to find a way to fix this somehow, even though it's not the best way. Just fix it for the moment and just get the boat back.
You said across the finish line. Was this something that you were doing in conjunction with others, or was this the finish line that you created?
Well, in an official attempt, because remember, I'm doing this under the auspices of the World Sailing Speed Record Council, who validate all these sailing records, the speed records across the Atlantic, you name it, around the world. They validate all those races, and so you have to have a starter. So I had an official starter, and my start line was across the entrance to Victoria Harbour up in BC. And so I had to get to that point to get across that finish line. I had my engine sealed off by an official, and I had to be towed to the start line to set up my sail over it eventually, because you're not allowed to sail in the harbour. And then, of course, coming back, I had to get to the finish line. And that was, that took two, three days. In fact, and I was expected back a week before I got back because the weather was so unkind to me. I just kept being becalmed. It was really, really difficult.
When you're out there doing something like that, do you think about how, you know, this is one of man's oldest pursuits, and you think about, you know, Magellan going for the cloves, the first one to circumnavigate and going around the Cape. Do you ever kind of think about sort of your place in history when you're out there by yourself?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. When I had my first knockdown off Cape Horn, when I was trying to get around Cape Horn the first time, coming down the Pacific and around into the Atlantic, I got a really bad knockdown and I ended up having to pull into Ushuaia. And then I was in the Beagle Channel and, wow, I really felt surrounded by the Beagle and all that history. You know, I felt so privileged to be down there and in that rather special space.
Was there a moment where you were like, you know what, the next port I see, I'm going in and I'm giving up. I can't take it anymore? Because I'm sure, you know, you're a human. You got to think at some point the privations, the cold, with the loneliness, you're like, I'm done. How do you fight through that?
I did think about pulling into Melbourne, but it wasn't anything, you know, as a vague option. I did look at the harbour and try to figure out how I could get in without my motor, because I, you know, I have to sail everywhere if I want to keep the unassisted side going. And I did have, you know, I had no instruments. My autopilot was not working. My wind steering had gone down before then. And I was in big seas. I was in 50, 60 knot winds and 8 meter, 10 meter seas, you know, 30 foot or more seas. I was in really, really bad conditions and everything seemed to be going down. And I seriously thought, you know, was I going to have to give up? I didn't want to if I could avoid it. And fortunately, you know, I was able to fix the problems one by one and keep on going. I mean, my main aim obviously was to keep going. I'd invested so much by then. I was over halfway round. You know, I wasn't going to pull in anywhere if I could avoid it, however much, you know, even if I had to hand steer the boat and take another year getting back, you know, damn it, I was going to get back.
So when you're in those kind of conditions, you're under the water almost, inside your cabin. How about leaks?
No, you have to you can only do this in a boat that's really sturdy and well prepared for the conditions, and the boat's a good sturdy one. So leaks, well, I did have occasionally when I got pooped by a wave coming over the stern and into the cockpit, even though I was well sealed for water coming up from the cockpit floor, any splashing of the wave, which happens sometimes onto my storm screen, would get through and onto the into the area around the companionway and down a little bit. So I did end up with a little bit of leakage, but it wasn't massive, and I did have a screen that protected the electronics and the chart table area, the nav table area.
So what would you say, I know we're concentrating on moments of peril, but what would you say maybe was the biggest brush with danger you had?
Oh, my knockdown off Stewart Island, definitely. I mean, again, I was actually sailing in 45 knot winds gusting higher in pretty big seas, you know, 6-8 meter seas maybe. And I was actually sailing in order to get down and around Stewart Island south of New Zealand so that I could avoid a bigger storm coming behind me. I know I had no choice. And in fact, I thought I was going pretty well. I had my tiny staysail and the deep reef main. I didn't have my mainsail in action at that moment. I was just under my head sail, just a tiny staysail.
Sorry to interrupt. Help me out here. I'm a bit of a neophyte. When you say knockdown, does that mean you personally are getting knocked down to the deck?
No, the whole boat gets knocked over by a big wave or something. I wasn't sure. Someone suggested I might have fallen into a trough, you know, the boat that is, mm-hmm. or I had a big wave come over and knock the wave over. Either way, we got knocked right over, and suddenly I find I'm getting drenched head to toe with water pouring into the boat from a hole in the roof, in the ceiling above me. That was pretty dramatic. I mean, I was in the middle of writing my blog for the day, and suddenly, bang, you know, this happens. And, oh, my God, you know, we've got water coming in. What the hell is going on? You know, we've been knocked down. Is the boat okay? Is the mast still up? You know, what is? There's definitely going to be damage to the boat. What damage is there? And then the whole boat was vibrating. Wow, it was vibrating so badly. I couldn't figure out why it was vibrating until later. I think it was only the next morning, actually, after I looked at, you know, realized there was a hole in the roof. I got out and had a look, because this was overnight. Of course, they always happen at night.
Nighttime, when you can see so well.
Anyway, I got out and found that one of the blades on my wind generator was missing. And so now the only two of the three were working, and that's why the whole boat was vibrating, because the wind generator was vibrating like mad. So, so my solar panels were torn away. I had this hole in the ceiling that I had to obviously repair pretty quickly, even if temporarily, and then do a better job later. So that was pretty dramatic.
And then finally, what's next for you? I'm sure there's always a new adventure around the horn, so to speak.
Well, at the moment, you know, having had so many things break and get damaged on the boat, You know, my mainsail, you know, was damaged. That needs replacing. My head sail was torn in shreds by the time I got back. I couldn't use it. So I've got and a lot of other things on the boat need replacing, repairing, fixing in some way. So that's a major task. I'm taking time off at the moment. As you gathered, I'm down in Mexico at the moment. It's winter in BC. The harbour authority there have been very, very kind to me. They've actually named a dock after me. Would you believe that?
Wow.
Great. It's an amazing honour. But so the boat is being left there till the summer, and then I'm going to go back and finish fixing. In the meantime, a good friend, Jerry, is actually working a bit on the boat for me. He just came along and volunteered and said, hey, can I help you? I'm really good at this. So I said, well, fine. You know, I mean, if you can help, that's amazing. So I'm having a little bit of things done on the boat in the meantime. I actually talked to someone about my wind transducer because I had no wind information reliably for about a good half of the time. So that was a problem. So I'm kind of keeping in touch, trying to get things organized and then get the boat fixed. And hopefully come September time, late September maybe, start cruising again, come down the coast in my boat to La Cruz here in Mexico, where I've been so many times, and then get off to Polynesia, Fiji, you know, Tonga, Fiji, do a little bit of the Pacific and enjoy life.
Wow, you should really make a plan. No, just kidding. I mean, oh my gosh, an inspiration to so many sailors of all genders and of all ages. We've been speaking to, I guess, Jean Socrate. Merci beaucoup, Jean, and best of luck. Bon voyage.
Thank you very much.
Have a great time.
And Karen, next week, is that Christmas Eve or is
yes.
that too? It is.
Yeah, and I'm going to be here.
You're going to be here doing a show.
And you're not.
You're going to break down the NFL draft. And you're gonna talk about maybe some of the winter meetings, some of the moves Farhan Zaidi made, and you're gonna do some sailing, right?
I'll definitely do some sailing. That's the part that you can count on me.
You'll
for.
Be in this chair. All right. Well, happy holidays. And we'll see you after.
Okay, sounds good, Rick.
Rick Tittle with you. We'll come on back on Sports Bible.